The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, episode 561. Cool stuff found for Sunday, July 12th, 2015. To the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, the show where, in a general sense, you send in your questions, we answer your questions, we share your tips, and today, as promised, we'll share cool stuff found. That is all the cool stuff that I've found, that John's found, that you've found very specifically, actually. In fact, most of the show comes from you. Very, very cool stuff on deck today. Some of it's free, yes. Some of it's going to cost you a little bit of money if you want to get it. We know the cool stuff found shows are the most expensive shows you listen to, and you love them anyway. That's just how it works. This episode is sponsored in part by Gazelle at gazelle.com, where you can buy and sell your old Apple equipment. We'll talk more about that shortly. Casper at casper.com/MGG, where coupon code MGG gets you $50 off a fantastic foam mattress that we will talk about later on in the show. And TunnelBear at tunnelbear.com/MGG. Something that started on this show is a cool stuff found, a VPN for you that works so easily. We'll talk about that shortly, too. Here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
Here in Fairfield, Connecticut, John F. Braun.
How are we doing today, John F. Braun?
We are at 101%.
Well, is that you're not running too hot?
Actually, no, about 100%. Yeah, I was running a bit hot last.
That's right.
Yeah, a bit too, I don't know. I always get that way when I recover from an illness.
That's good.
It's kind of an overdrive.
That's good.
So yeah, I think I'm at just the right level, I believe.
Perfect.
To flow smoothly.
Well, it's all about the flow. Hey, you know, I want to talk about our first sponsor here, which is TunnelBear. I mentioned it in the pre-show, John. TunnelBear, and they want you to visit them at tunnelbear.com/MGG, because that way they know we sent you. We've talked a lot about VPNs on this show, and TunnelBear has taken the concept of a VPN. That is putting encrypting the pipe that you use to connect to the internet. And more than that, though, and also relocating where it is you connect from. They have taken that whole process that's even hard to kind of explain and just made it super, super simple. It is literally one click on and off simple connections. So the idea behind this is you can use it for a lot of different things. If you're in, let's say you're in a coffee shop, it's a great example, but really anywhere, a hotel, anywhere that you're out and about and you don't manage the network yourself or don't necessarily have any reason to trust the people that manage the network, and you don't want anyone sniffing on your traffic, TunnelBear, or any VPN, but really in this case TunnelBear, what it does is it takes your connection, and instead of you connecting, say, directly to your bank, which someone sniffing the network could see, you connect to TunnelBear, and then via this encrypted tunnel you connect to your bank out that way. But no one at the coffee shop monitoring your network can see that you're doing anything other than have this encrypted tunnel to TunnelBear. They can't see what the traffic is because it's end-to-end encrypted. Even if you're visiting a non-encrypted site, the data that's sent over the tunnel is encrypted anyway. Simple, simple, simple. And it literally is one click. And there's apps for iPhone, iPad, Mac, of course, Windows. I believe they even have a Linux thing, although it's unsupported, but it does totally work. They just don't have support staff for it. It also allows you to choose where the end of that tunnel is. So, you know, when I set it up and use it by default, I connect to a tunnel that ends here in the U.S. So it's a very quick connection and I can get out, and it appears as though I'm coming from somewhere in the United States. If I wanted to choose that I was coming from somewhere in, say, Germany, I could. And theoretically, I might even be able to stream NFL games over that, although I haven't tried that. So there's all kinds of reasons that you might want to choose where your endpoint is. And TunnelBear lets you do that, too. Here's the thing. TunnelBear.com/MGG, you get a free account. Now, if you use more than, I think it's 500 megs of bandwidth in a month, they'll cut you off. but then you re-up for the next month. But that's the best way to get started. You just try it out. And you just install an app on your Mac, your iPhone, your iPad. You just launch the app, you hit the button, and you are connected. You are good to go. If you want to use more than that, of course, they've got various plans, and you can sign up for those at tunnelbear.com. And here's the thing. So they've got the little plan, which is 500 megs of free data every month. You get a giant plan, which is $6.99 a month, and that's billed monthly. And then you can, if you want to do it annually, it's $50 a year for the Grizzly plan, and you save a ton of money. And then it gets you unlimited bandwidth, unlimited tunneling on any 5 computers or mobile devices. So it's very cool. And here's the thing: when you sign up for Tunnel Bear, all they want, they have the best privacy policy I've ever seen. They only want your first name, not your last name. They save no logs of your usage times or sessions. They do save your monthly data use because they need to know if they need to bill you. And they save the total number of connections you've had over your lifetime of the account, but not anything, specific to any given month. No IP addresses are saved for where you come from or where you're connecting to. No data about where you visited is logged. Of course, if you sign up with a credit card, they have to track you they need some information about you. But if you don't want them to give them that information, they will take Bitcoin for payment. I've tested this in various places, but the best place that I tested it was actually here at the house, because I have a massively fast internet connection here, and I wanted to test and see how fast their connection was. And it's super fast. I was getting like 30 megs down, 6-7 megs up. I mean, these are screaming fast connections that you get to Tunnel Bear. So you got to check it out. Tunnelbear.com/MGG. And that will get you a free account, 500 megs a month. Check it out. Tunnelbear.com/MGG. And with that, John, I think it's time to jump straight in to our first of our cool stuff founds. And that will be, I was actually very happy to pick this one because it's very targeted for Mac Geek Gab users. Marcus writes, he said, my name is Marcus, and I am your show's long listener. I work as an iOS developer and would like to thank you for your wonderful podcast, which gave me inspiration and information that helped create a better user experience when developing iOS apps. And the app HiCast that I have personally worked on contains hot features for a podcast player. And in fact, it is. He says, as a fan of your show, I've long been spending great efforts to create enhanced content for us to listen to. And I have added that in to HiCast as well. This is a very cool podcast player for iOS. You got to check it out. We'll put a link in the show notes, of course. And there you go. Thank you, Marcus, for creating a fantastic podcast player. Folks, you got to check this one out. So that's where we start from, John. Did you check out HiCast yet or not yet?
Not yet.
Okay. Well, that's understandable. We have a follow-up from a previous show, John. Steve said, we were talking in 559 about, I mentioned that there would be a great way, it would be great if there was an iOS app to easily allow you to restart your Mac by if it automatically SSH'd in and issued that sudo shutdown -r now command, right? Well, it looks like the, what's it called? iNet network scanner from Banana Glue will do exactly that. Now, I downloaded this. I purchased it. I purchased the pro version, and that it seems to do it on the iPad, but I can't find the way to do it in the UI on the iPhone. Maybe I'm missing something, but thank you, Steve, for sending that one along. It's a cool app. Even this aside, it does all kinds of great things. Do you have this, John? They have a free version and a pro version. I downloaded the pro to see if I could get, into these features, but there's also some limited functionality, but cool stuff in the free version. Have you tried it out, man?
Not yet.
All right. Well,
I'm okay with, so most of my inter-machine interactions, I haven't gotten to a point where I've needed to do this, but okay. I should get this because I know we get into the situations where your machine's dead to the world and it's like, now what?
Now what? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 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 So it's good stuff. All right. Along these networking lines, John, and I think this happened while I was, while we were talking with listener Bob, I have him credited for this, but Bob sent us a link to something called the ICSI Netalyzer. Did you, have you?
That sounds geeky.
It is geeky, John. It's a thing. It's a website at berkeley.edu. It requires that you run Java in your browser and you have to give permission to the thing to do it. But it tests your internet connection in so many different ways and shows you a very cool, you know, picture of what your network looks like, both in and out. And they do save the data in an anonymous way because they're also using it. It's from Berkeley, right? They're using it to map, you know, how the internet looks and using this data as sort of an opt-in for that. But you got to check it out. You got to check it out. It's good stuff. It's cool stuff. That's where we go with it. What do you got? You got something for us, John, here?
I do, Dave. I'm going to tell you what I have for you here. It's something from our pals at MacPaw that makes several interesting pieces of Mac software. But this is something that I noticed came across my desk. Well, not really. It came across my email, and I thought I'd give it a shot. And I think it's something useful for our population. And it's called Encrypto. And as you can probably guess, based on the name, what does it do? It encrypts your files. And then you send them to friends or coworkers or whoever. And the workflow couldn't be easier. So it's using AES 256 encryption, which is nobody's going to be able to crack that. But like a lot of other products, I think the interface is very easy. So it's free. So you can go to the App Store and get it or go to their website. It's for Mac and Windows. Then you basically fire it up. You drag the file or files onto their app. It will then encrypt them. Then the next step is you can say, well, there are two next steps, which is cool as well. So one is you can add it to Hyder, which is one of their products that we've talked about in the past. So that's, you know, kind of a plug for them.
Yep.
So you can integrate with one of their other products, but then it brings up the standard share dialog that OS X offers. And the default choices that I see here right now are you can mail the encrypted file, you can send it via messages, you can send it via AirDrop, and hey, of course, you can send it to Evernote.
Oh, I like that.
And then when the recipient gets it, they'll get an attachment and then they're told, okay, well, this file was, you know, encrypted with Encrypto and please download it so you can decrypt it. And you have to use a password, of course. And you can also offer a hint for the recipient. And that's really about it. So it's free file encryption for Mac and Windows people.
Cool. And so it requires a... the recipient has to use the app. It doesn't create some magically self-contained thing. I mean, it couldn't.
Correct.
Right. Okay. All right. Yeah. I just wanted to make that clear. All right. Cool. Hey, yeah, that's awesome.
Have you tried this, Dave?
No, I haven't.
just thought I'd ask.
Yeah. No, it's a valid question. Yeah. No, I found out about it this morning when I saw you put it on the agenda. It's good stuff, man. All right. Moving to Chuck. Chuck sent us a note and he said, I think it was episode 557. A user was looking for an app to launch Apple scripts or Automator actions when certain emails come in. There is an app called Actuator. And he says Actuator does exactly that. It seems that it's not just tied to Apple's mail app. I think you can point it at any email account. Chuck continues, you basically tell it what script you want to run based on specifically worded or specially worded emails. It would be more useful if you could tell it to always run script X when receiving an email with the word, you know, say mom in it, for example. But still, it's pretty cool. Sweet. Thanks, Chuck. That is good stuff. I like it. I like it. I like it. I love AppleScript, John.
Oh, we all, well, usually we love it, but sometimes we hate it, which I think is a great, well, we hate its deficiencies. And I think that leads into an adventure. Actually, you and I both went on, but I'll let you,
well, yeah,
on this one. Yeah. I was trying to, we had, so you had a AppleScript question. I did some dabbling and poked around and found some ways to solve your issue. And then we actually had, one of our Twitter pals, who was like a AppleScript guru
at Apple, no less. Yeah. Yeah. So
as far as I can tell, it was, yeah. Or at least he's in Cupertino. So I assume it's someone that works at Apple who
Ben works at Apple now. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, he does. Okay.
There's no question. Yeah. So wait, what John is dancing around here is a great tool called Script Debugger for AppleScript. I was creating an AppleScript, having some trouble with seeing what was stored in a variable at a certain time. And the AppleScript has no, you know, IDE, I guess is the right term for it. Interactive Development Environment. Is that what we're supposed to call it? Right.
Right. Their tools are very, yeah. The script editor, I think, is their tool, which is not an IDE, really. It's an editor.
It's just an editor. Yeah, exactly. And so Script Debugger from Late Night Software is exactly the tool that we all need. And it did. It totally, you can download a demo if you continue to use it. Of course, they want you to buy it, which totally makes sense. But man, it allowed me instant visibility into exactly what was going on in my script. And that actually, along with some other help from Ben on Twitter, really, really helped me solve things. But yeah, being able to see, you know, what a variable is set to mid script and being able to pull that information out. And I think, I'm 99% certain that Script Debugger is just more AppleScript running around AppleScript is what I think it does. And it's able to pull this data out and let your script run. And I found it immensely valuable and quite flawless in its ability to do what I needed it to do. So you got to check this out. If you're doing anything with AppleScript, Script Debugger is in fact a mandatory thing to check out. So thanks for recommending that, Ben. This is good stuff. All right. Steve writes in and says there is a free music editor called MuseScore that supports PDFs. And we were talking about various things. I think it might have been a post-show conversation, but it might have been in the middle of the show. And it allows you to create and print sheet music. So that's MuseScore. It's got a, you know, you can create sheet music, which is totally helpful. And in fact, I think they have some drummer stuff in here, which is, you know, important to drummers like me that actually know how to read and chart out drum parts. So thanks for bringing that up, Steve. Good stuff. What do we got, John?
What do we got? In the crypto realm, let's continue down that path because we want you to protect your data. And this is, I don't think it ever made it to the show. Someone did have a question that was based on something that I had recommended in the past. And it's a project that now has been, that has been discontinued called TrueCrypt. TrueCrypt is a cross-platform, full disk encryption product. But for whatever reason, they decided to abandon development on it, which makes lots of people sad. But then what makes me happy, Dave, is that I, you know, when someone asks me, well, you know, can I still use TrueCrypt? And I guess you can if you can find it, though I'd be concerned because, again, it's not under active development, but a group of people have decided to take it because it's open source, basically took it and revived it and are now actively maintaining it. And it's now called VeraCrypt.
Huh.
I mean, from what I could see, you know, I downloaded it, started it up, and it gave me the same exact, because it's the same code base, the same exact dialogues that you got in TrueCrypt. So I would gather it has, you know, the exact same functionality as the prior product. So just to keep people up to date, VeraCrypt. If you miss TrueCrypt and want something that's current, VeraCrypt.
Huh. Pretty cool. That's awesome. But is there, as a Mac user, I totally get why you would use this on a, potentially use this on other platforms, but as a Mac user, is there a compelling reason to use Veracrypt over the built-in, always supported by the OS, and yes, I'm editorializing my question here, File Vault 2?
No.
Okay.
No, I would say as you're kind of leading up to, the void it fills is that if you need cross-platform,
right?
Because it's available for multiple platforms. So I would say that's the value.
If I had an external drive, for example, that would be the benefit of using TrueCrypt, is it could then be decrypted on multiple platforms.
Right. So depending on how you set it up, and I think, so if you set it up to be a secure container rather than full disk, then that secure container, if you run TrueCrypt on the other platform, will be usable on the other platforms that are supported by it.
Got it.
I hope that answers your question. So if you need cross-platform encryption, full disk or container encryption, this is why you would use that. Otherwise, if you're just sticking to your Mac, then use File Vault.
Got it. Sweet. All right. I want to talk about our second sponsor here, John, which is Casper. Casper they make and sell mattresses. And here's the thing. They want you to visit casper.com/MGG, and I'll tell you why in a minute. So having a good mattress to sleep on is obviously really important. But there's a couple of things that were very broken with the process of going to buy a mattress. First of all, going somewhere other than your home to test out a mattress is sort of insane when you stop to think about it. And the people at Casper agreed, spending 5 minutes laying on a mattress in a store to find out if you like it is weird, because you're doing it in your street clothes. You probably still have your shoes on, and it's bright lights and with some sales rep, fluttering about, and kids running all over the place, because they're there with their parents who are also shopping. And so not paying attention, they probably go over to the ice cream counter and eat ice cream while, and then get hyped up. And so you probably don't want to test out your mattress with ice cream hyped kids running all around you. And the people at Casper knew this. So they created not only do they have excellent mattresses, but they have a much better business model. And the way it works is this. You go to casper.com/MGG, and then that will tell you to use the MGG coupon code on your way out to save $50. But here's the thing. These mattresses start, you don't even need to save the $50 to get a savings out of this deal. You go online, you pick what size mattress you want, and you order it and have it shipped to your house for free. And when it arrives, it comes in this great box. It's all rolled up inside the box. And the opening, the process of opening this box is brilliant. First you just open the box, and then you kind of pull out this mattress that's still rolled up in a sleeve. And it comes with a little envelope that gives you some instructions, but the instructions are really simple. They tell you to take this letter opener, put it at the dot on this sleeve, and run it across. And by putting it at the dot, you're not going to rip the mattress. You're just ripping open the sleeve, and then the thing pops out. If you need to, you could be within 90 seconds of starting to open the box, you could be laying on this mattress and falling asleep. Now, I don't know how many of us could fall asleep after opening a mattress box, but if you could, the mattress will be ready for you to do so. So you lay down and you get to test this mattress for 100 nights, not 5 minutes in the store, 100 nights. And if you don't like it in those first 100 nights, you don't get to pick the 100 nights. They've already picked them. It's the first 100. But if you don't like it in that first 100 nights, you call them up and tell them, I don't like it. It's just not for me. And they take it from you with no charge to you. There's no charge at all. You get all your money back, and you don't pay anything if you don't like the mattress. But these are memory foam mattresses. You're going to love them. And they're not just memory foam. They're this new breed of memory foam that has memory foam in the middle and then a latex foam around the outside. And there's a reason for this. Anybody that slept on the original kind of memory foam mattresses found that, yes, they do contour to your body and hold you up and make you really sweaty. And that's because memory foam traps the heat. Well, that's why Casper puts this layer of latex foam around it, because it doesn't trap the heat. The latex disperses the heat, so it keeps you cool and comfortable. These mattresses are killer. We've got one here at the house. It's awesome. And they're made right here in America. But here's the thing. You know, if you want a king sized mattress, right? Because that's going to be the most expensive one, right? A king size mattress is $950 minus $50. So $900 shipped for free to you for a king size mattress, like super quality memory foam. That's the most expensive mattress you're going to buy, right? Well, it's not, though, because you could go to that showroom with the ice cream laden kids running all around you and pay maybe about $1,200 to $1,500 for the same type of mattress at this store. So you're saving money. You don't have to go to the store. It's delivered right to your house. You don't have to worry about fitting the thing in your car or anything. You just set it up and you're done. Saves the headache. Really, really comfortable mattress. Really, like, insanely fair prices. And 100-day returns. Casper.com/MGG is where you start. And then coupon code MGG gets you your $50 off. You're going to love it. And you're going to get a great night's sleep. Casper.com/MGG. All right, John. Listener Jason got listener Jason is he's always the one who's constantly submitting great cool stuff found to us, mostly on Twitter. But Jason, it did a fantastic job this week with the show. And O-Drive is the first of the wonderful things that Jason suggested to us. O-Drive, he says, or they say, is the new way to manage all of your files. Instead of fussing with multiple cloud storage applications, use O-Drive to combine and access everything in one place. And of course, they let you sign up for free. And it's one login for everything. They've got a great, they've got Dropbox and FTP, Google Drive, Instagram, Microsoft's OneDrive, all kinds of things. And he says it's actually pretty cool. Did you check this one out, John?
Oh, Instagram. Okay. Because, this looks very similar to something that I have looked at.
Okay.
So now that I see the difference here, I may want to look at these guys. But remember Expand Drive?
Yes, I do. Right. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
This looks very similar, though the difference I can already see is that it appears that they offer a couple of more services.
Yeah.
Including Instagram. That's as far as I know, Expand Drive does not or did not.
Right.
I'm looking at it right now. So.
Right. It's pretty good stuff, man. Pretty good stuff. All right. Another one from Jason. We've got three in a row from Jason here. Another one from Jason. PicJoy is an automatic photo organizer, John. So this is yet another one for folks like you and me who like to manage pictures. It's an intelligent photo library that automatically organizes all of your photos and helps you find them instantly. So this looks at the photo library on your phone. Right now, it connects to iCloud photo library or your camera roll on the phone or both, which is sort of one and the same if you're running iCloud photo library. But if not, they say that Dropbox, Google, and Amazon photos are coming very, very soon. And you can search your photos by visual clues and time, location, events, weather, people, customize the way your photos are organized. I messed with this a little bit after Jason sent it along, and it's interesting. It takes a little time. It goes through and indexes or does whatever it's going to do with your photos, and then actually sends you a little sends you a little notification, and then you can search for things like, the weather was cloudy, and it gives you little suggestions of these, and then boom, it brings up pictures where the weather was cloudy. It's pretty cool. So something fun to try out. It's free. So thanks, Jason. Good stuff. Yeah. One more from Jason, John. Moving a little bit in a little bit different direction is BitTorrent Shoot. So the idea is, you know, the folks at BitTorrent are great. We love them. And I love BitTorrent Sync. It's the way I manage all of my files nowadays. But BitTorrent Shoot is built to send photos or videos directly from device to device. All peer-to-peer. It's not going to send over, you know, it's not going to send up to the cloud and back. So you get really high speed, whatever the speed of your, you know, your local wireless is, and you can just bounce files around. You can send three times for free, and then they want you to pay, but it's like $2 to unlock the app. So it's totally worth checking out. And I highly recommend it. I tested it here, and it does. It just blasts things really, really fast. The nice part is, of course, you could use AirDrop to do this between iOS devices. You know, if AirDrop decides to work and expose, you know, which it's when it does, it's awesome. I mean, it's super fast. But if it doesn't, or if you need to send photos between, say, an iPhone and an Android phone, or, you know, somebody else on another device that doesn't support AirDrop, then you've got BitTorrent Shoot. So it's super fast. And it, you know, it's fun. It's what we do, right?
Shoot.
That's what they say. All right, John. You know, we've had quite
a afraid.
Are you afraid? We're going to head into the terminal, John. You shouldn't
That's
be
why
afraid.
I'm afraid. No, I'm kidding. No. You shouldn't be afraid of the terminal. The terminal is a wonderful place to be.
It is. And so we had quite a few as we were kind of leading up to prepping this cool stuff found here, quite a few terminal commands. And so I wanted to coalesce them all together. And we'll start with Alex. Alex over on Facebook, and we'll link to our Facebook group. Said he was having geeky fun with the airport command. He says, I just discovered this little thing, so I thought I'd share. And he gives the link to where this command is, and it is literally called airport, but it's not part of your normal path. So if you just go to the terminal and type airport, it's not going to work. But he explains where to find it. It's in the system library private frameworks folder, but it's okay. And you can create a symbolic link to it if you want to put it in like user sbin or something to make it easy. And then you can run airport at the terminal. And you get a little help file, and you can pull up a man page on airport. But he says that's very vacant. The help file is better. But if you do, you know, airport dash I, capital I, it prints all the current wireless status like you get when you hit the magic little when you hit the actually, and this is another tip. If you hit the airport menu at the top of the screen and hold down the option key when you hit it, You start to see some really interesting information, and the airport command will show you that. It'll show you all kinds of other stuff. So it's just a fun little command to run. And thanks to Alex for pointing us in this direction. It's fun stuff, John. Did you mess around with this one yet?
Not really, since I get, yeah. Most of the stuff that I need to know, I get by what you just mentioned, which is holding down the option key.
Yep.
Yeah. You can do it. It's kind of weird, though, because, yeah, as you pointed out, because, yeah, I typed airport and I'm like, oh, where is it? Yeah. So it's buried deep within the system. And then, yeah, the man page is kind of hilarious. And then it basically says, yeah, could somebody put something here, please?
Right. Well, that's how it works. You know, it's all good. It's all good. But it's, yeah, it makes it. I love finding the terminal commands like this, you know. All right. And let's see, where are we next? I think I'm finding a flow to how to do these show notes. Oh, this one's great. So Ben told us about a terminal command called caffeinate. And this is awesome, John. You know, and it was actually, in fact, let me find Ben's note here, because I think he actually wrote us a note. If I can find it. Yeah, he did. He said, I heard your question about trying to keep a Mac awake to complete a disk image slash clone while in recovery mode in MacGeekab 559. John mentioned adjusting PM set in the terminal, but have you also tried using the terminal command? Yes, caffeinate, which does exactly what the caffeine menu bar app does, but from the command line. And Brett Terpstra, who's a great guy and and a really smart guy wrote a blog post about it, which we'll totally link to because it explains this command. But it's worth just trying. And it's, here's how it works, because I've actually got it running at the moment on my wife's computer. I know I mentioned in the last show that I was going to migrate her to iCloud Photo or to Photos without using iCloud Photo Library. And then I moved her photo data to our NAS drive once I did the conversion, and that worked fine. We'll talk more about all of this when the whole process is done. But right now I've got the Flickr auto uploader on her Mac uploading all of her pictures. Now, she had 29,000 pictures to upload. So this is taking a couple of days. And I noticed every time I went to check on it that the number wasn't really moving. And it was because, of course, her Mac was falling asleep. And then I started prepping this show and I found this command called caffeinate. And so you can use it a couple different ways. If you just type caffeinate, what happens is the terminal just sits there as though nothing has happened. You don't get a prompt back or anything, but that's caffeinate doing its job. While it's running, your computer won't go to sleep. The display, by default, this just prevents idle sleep. So the display will go to sleep. Disks will spin down if they're supposed to, but your Mac will not fall asleep. And so it's just running. And then when I'm finished, I could do Control C and it would quit caffeinate and therefore let my Mac then go back to its normal thing. And this way I don't have to mess around with PM set or energy saver settings that I forget to set back, right? This is the handy part about caffeinate. And it works great. But you can also set things like watch this process, right? So you can point it at a process ID and say, you know, caffeinate until this process quits, which is actually kind of cool if you've got a job running or something. I know I'll use this. In fact, I'll use it as a matter of course with, you know, when I'm doing handbrake conversions and things like that. So yeah, it's very, very cool. And you can have it do display sleep. You can have it wake up the display on a remote Mac and all this other stuff. So yeah, caffeinate, and it's from Apple. I mean, it's, you know, it's on everybody's computer. If I don't know. I don't know what OS it came with, to be honest with you. So maybe it's not on everybody's computer, but it's certainly on Yosemite machines. So there you go.
Yeah.
The hardest part about it is that. Go ahead. Sorry, John. Yep.
Well, so to add two things. So yeah, the comment was how do I prevent sleep and recovery? And two things come to mind. So number one, I ran into the same thing you did. Well, actually, I ran into a number of things. So one, keep in mind that if you want to know what the switches are or the options for the caffeinate command, recovery, because I tried this, recovery doesn't have man pages, which I guess I don't blame it because
sure,
it takes up space. Recovery is a very minimal OS X installation because I did man caffeinate. And then, yeah, I ran into the same thing you did is I typed caffeine and I was like, now what? But that's normal operating procedures. And if you just type in the command itself and hit return, it's doing exactly what it's meant to do. But what concerns me, Dave, is that the way sleep works, everything I read about sleep bothers me because sleep says I'm going to sleep if your system is inactive. And it's funny because what you mentioned and what our listener ran into, you know, they said, yeah, I'm creating a disk image. I don't consider creating a disk image or actively uploading photo content an inactive system. Do you see where I'm going with this? I don't know why the system is sleeping. How does Apple define?
Right.
What is their definition of inactive? Because to me, those are your system's actively doing some work. So what is their threshold for determining when a system is inactive and,
you know, with the
deciding to put it to sleep?
With the Flickr uploader thing, I get it, right? Because this is a background process. In fact, I would sort of be upset if it didn't let the system sleep, because there could be some, you know what I mean? We've seen it where it's like, oh, why isn't this app letting it sleep? You know, it's the background, but you're right. Creating a disk image, is that a background? You know, maybe it is the kind of thing that you'd put in the background, but you'd want it to finish. But anyway, yeah, caffeinate will solve it. But I'm with you on this. I'm with you. I don't know.
Well, actually, we may have some answers here. So I'm looking in our chat room here. Where's our chat room, you may ask, Dave?
Where is our chat room, John?
Oh, well, I think if you go to macgeekgab.com/stream, You can access both our live audio stream and our chat room. And I believe our friend Alex in the chat room actually pointed out a number of commands that I guess if you whip out the manual page for him, you may learn a bit more. So he mentions appsleepd. That sounds like a daemon that handles appsleep. So that may be good to read up on. And then he also points to, yes, caffeinate and also sleep, of course. So, yeah, I guess we should read up on those. And he even linked to a developer note that talks about inactive. Inactivity is.
Yeah.
All right, so we got to read up on that. But, yeah, I'm still going to wag my finger at Apple because.
Yeah, same.
Inactive.
Yeah. In this case, it would be Apple either way. But do we wave our finger at the developers for not, which is Apple, of course, when you're creating a disk image, for not setting the, you know, inactive flag, whatever that is, properly. Right?
Okay. I don't know. Well, he's talking about a different type of inactive. He's talking about inactive memory. Yeah. Okay. Whereas I'm talking about how do you define inactivity in the sense of, you know, what your system is doing and should
go
to sleep.
Right.
Okay.
Right. I don't know. It's good stuff, though. Yeah.
All right, moving on.
Well, I need a minute before we move on here, John, because I was fixing the show notes here, but doing your work for you. So it's all good. But anyway, here we go. And it is time to get back to the terminal. Devin has a fantastic thing, I'm certain. And if I get there, I'll tell you about it. Devin says, I've been looking for a way to get a complete list of applications on my Mac for years. Every couple of years, I end up doing a nuke and pave, and I like to do a fresh install of apps. However, I always found it to be a hassle to reference my old drive and remember everything I had previously installed, which sometimes doesn't show in the applications folder, i.e. menu bar items, etc. He said, Lifehacker delivered with an article that shows how to run a terminal command. It's a very simple command to run, and you get a complete list of the applications, including all the menu bar applications and all of that stuff in text form. And of course, we'll link to this Lifehacker article. It's a find command, and essentially what it's doing is scouring your entire hard drive for files that end in .app, which is how applications are registered on the Mac. Applications are not actually single files. They are when you run them at the terminal, but when you run an application, say from the Finder, it is most typically a bundle, and it's a bundle that ends in .app. So that's the magic there. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes because that's how we work. All right. So thank you. That's good stuff. Did you check that one out, John?
No.
Okay, cool. For further reading on the terminal, Kurt tips us to Craig Hockenberry's article, which I can't seem to find in here. Oh, there it is. And never mind. Craig Hockenberry, who is he's an Icon Factory developer, right? And very outspoken and very smart guy. And he wrote a great piece kind of capturing all that it is about the terminal. And so we'll put that in the show notes and just kind of a real great overview of the terminal. It gets pretty geeky at times, but if you go through it all, it's probably one of those articles that if you just read it straight through, it'd take you about 10 minutes. If you read it with an eye on, you know, interacting with it, you could probably spend an hour with this article, and I recommend you do the latter. It's a fantastic piece here that really walks you through, all the kind of all the nuances of how to use the terminal. So we will link to that too, John, because that's how we roll here. What you got anything for us in the terminal realm here? I think you do.
This actually is not the terminal, though. Okay. I suppose you could do this in the terminal.
Sure.
It's a GUI-based application. And I thought I'd mention it because I actually, so when I was doing the So when I got this new Switch of mine, Dave, and as you recall, there was a Java or Windows, which turned out to be a Java utility. And it does something kind of bizarre if you run it on a Mac, in that it won't necessarily run. You have to fiddle around with redirecting packets and stuff like that. And so it led me to a point where I'm like, how do I send traffic on my network to kind of test whether I've set this up right? Well, wouldn't it be great if there was a utility that would allow you to create a TCP/IP or UDP, I guess, packet from scratch with either hex or alphanumeric data and give an address of a device to send it to and hit a button and it sends it? Wouldn't that be great if somebody made something like that? Well, somebody does make something like that, and it's not surprisingly called Packet Sender.
Oh, nice.
At packetsender.com, and it's available for Windows, Mac, and Linux. And it does exactly what it needs to. And actually, what I see here, oh, I guess there is a terminal aspect. So apparently it offers a GUI version, which I think most people is probably what you want to do.
Yeah, sure. Of course.
But if you want, but it says, but I'm looking here, I had not actually tried it, but it says here command line screenshot, and that I guess it offers a command line version as well. If you decide that's what you want to do.
Sure. Nice, man. Very cool. All right. I want to take a minute here, John, before we move away from the terminal. And I want to talk about our third and final sponsor for this show, which is Gazelle at gazelle.com. Gazelle, something I've used countless times. It's a service. They started as a service, and they still do this, where you use Gazelle to send your stuff to them. And they send you money. It's basically that simple, right? If you have like an old iPhone, an old MacBook, an old iPad, something that you want to, you know, upgrade to a newer version, but you want to turn what you have into some cash, Gazelle's the place to do it. You visit gazelle.com and you click on the sell smart, i.e. trade in for cash link. And from there you tell them what you have. And, you kind of go through the process. They'll even take old iPods, right? So you got that old iPod Classic, man, you can turn that into money. So you tell them, all right, yeah, I got an iPod Classic. It's sixth gen. It's the 160 gig version, you know, and it's in working condition. They ask you what condition things are in. And then they'll ask you questions like, does it have a charger? Does it have engraving or personalization? And then boom, you can turn it into some money. And, you know, for a really old Apple iPod Classic, they're going to give me $40. Here's the thing. They haven't even asked for my name yet. I literally did this while I've been doing this spot here, right? It's that simple. And now it's like I click the get paid link. Now they ask me for my name. They haven't asked me for any information for me yet other than what I want to give them. So I give them my name and I give them my address and they ship me a box. And then I'll put the iPod Classic into the box and I'll ship it back to them. And they'll evaluate it and make sure that there's an iPod Classic in the box and that it's either working or not working, whatever I chose. I chose working when I went through this. And then they send me a check. Or if I want an extra 5%, they'll send me the money on Amazon. And it's great. Or they'll send it to you via PayPal if you want. And that's how it is. It just works. Really, really simple. And they're good folks there. I have never, in my experience with them, had them... Well, actually, this is not, I was going to say I've never had them disagree with my assessment of an item, but that is not true. There was one time I sent in, it was an old iPod, and I sent it to him and I chose, you know, it was like fair, good, and great. And I chose good. And, you know, I got a quote for whatever that was. And when they got it, they said, hey, you know, this is in better shape than you said. We're going to upgrade you to best. And I got a little bit more money out of it. And of course, when they change their mind on something like that, they ask you, are you okay with this or do you want to take it back? Even though there was going to be more money, they said, you know, they gave me the choice. And of course, I said, well, yeah, I'll take the money. And I took it as Amazon bucks and I spent the money on Amazon. It was all fantastic. So it really, really works well. And now they have a Buy Smart program. When they get some of those things in that do qualify as best, they'll refurb them and really check them out and make sure it's all okay. And then sell them back to you. So you got to check this out. You want to talk about cool stuff found, man. This is where to do it. And you can get some really good deals, both selling and buying. And it's just super simple. It makes it really, really easy. So you got to check them out. Gazelle.com. When you're going through the checkout process, choose the Mac Geek Gab from the Where Did You Hear From This the link. They appreciate that. And so do we. Thanks very much, Gazelle. All right, John. I have had the opportunity to check out Seagate's new Backup Plus drive. This is... So I've checked out their Backup Plus Fast in the past, and that is a 4 terabyte drive, which this one is as well. But that's it's got two drives in the enclosure, the Backup Plus Fast does. And that obviously makes it faster, but it makes it so that it requires double USB power, and you've got to use a USB Y cable to make it work. Well, the Seagate Backup Plus drive is 4 terabytes, and it's just one drive. So it just requires single USB cable bus power. I tested it on USB 3 because that's what it supports. As I said, it's a 4 terabyte drive. I was getting 135 megabytes a second reads and writes. That's faster than they expected it to get. In fact, they asked me, did we send you the wrong drive? And I said, no, I've got them both. And it actually works really well. Now I repartitioned it because I got a copy before the Mac drivers were fully included on there. So I just repartitioned the thing, and that may have helped. You know, I repartitioned it as an HFS Plus journals drive, just normal, you know, thing. And that may have helped, but this thing's pretty good. I'm very impressed with it. It's like I said, totally bus powered, totally easy to use. And you know, 4 terabytes, man. And it's like, you know, $140 MSRP. So I think, am I looking at the right one on their website here? I think I am. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. For 4 terabytes?
Huh? Backup Plus Slim. Sorry. Backup Plus Slim. No, that's it. Backup Plus. Yeah. 4 terabytes. Yeah. That's it. That's it. Yeah. I like it. It's outstanding. So I think that's it. Maybe it's not on their website. Yes. Yet. Cause I'm not seeing. No. Huh. I don't know that I have pricing on this yet, John. It might be so new that I don't have Backup Plus Slim. Yeah, they only have the two. Well, but see, this isn't the Backup Plus Slim. This is just the Backup Plus. I think that's it. I think it's $140, man. It's great, but it's like wallet sized. I mean, it's totally portable and 4 terabytes and screaming fast. So nice little handy, you know, bus powered thing to have to run around with. I was impressed. Very impressed, in fact. We talked about the Backup Plus Fast, and Max sent in a note about the Seagate Backup Plus Portable Thunderbolt Adapter that he found, which is a super handy thing for anyone that wants to take one of these drives and plug it in to a Thunderbolt port. So we'll put a link to that. In the show notes. Thanks for sending that in, Max. Good stuff. Bob, along the kind of along the same lines, Bob has the linked us to the Western Digital 4 terabyte drive. I'm trying to think of he just sent us. Oh, you know what? It's because he sent us an email with it, but he didn't say much about it in the email. So I'll just riff on it here. The My Passport Pro. Which he has used. I have not, but Bob has used. So in the same vein, it's a portable 4 terabyte drive, which is, you know, a handy thing to be able to kind of run around with. I don't know if it looks like this is just a one cable thing. Oh, this is a Thunderbolt thing. That's why. Yeah. So the My Passport Pro Thunderbolt, at least based on what I'm seeing here, John.
Huh. 4 terabyte. That's old news, man. Well, you remember we were just at the show in,
yeah,
Manhattan, and I think the new hotness is now 6 terabyte drives, right?
Well, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
or at least that's what WD was displaying, full size.
I was going to say full size. Yeah, these are smaller portable things. But you're right. Yeah, well, and there's 8 terabyte drives out too, right?
Crazy.
Yeah. Oh, it's you know, but you're right. The sweet spot price wise, I think, is now either the 5 or the 6 terabyte drive for desktop drives, like for, you know. full size, like you said, I guess is the right way to. The right way to present it. I don't know. It's just crazy how you can carry around 4 terabytes with you and have it be pretty fast. So see, this is where it's great that people are still iterating on the spindle drive, because that's important, right? You know, that we have this massive amounts of storage. You run the SSD as your boot drive and your kind of your daily driver, so to speak. And then you have a nice spindle drive to have gobs and gobs of data. So I'm stoked about this. It's good stuff. Hey, speaking of iteration on the spindle drive, have you seen the Seagate 7? This is for $100. It's a 500 gig drive, but it is, they call it the Seagate 7 because the entire thing, it's an external drive, 7 millimeters thick, or millimeters thin.
Oh,
perhaps.
That's horrible.
It's awesome. I mean, it's just really, really tiny, and it's $100 for a 500 gig drive for 0.5 terabyte. But just, I mean, super, super slim and obviously lightweight. It's a steel enclosure so that it dissipates heat and, you know, all that good stuff. But it's just amazing seeing 7 millimeters.
Wow. I'd be afraid of sitting on it and breaking it.
I have not tried.
But you said it's steel, so I'm sure it's as tough as it can be for that size.
Yeah, I have not tried it. Sitting on it. I've tried the drive. In fact, I'm looking for my notes here. I can't find them. I know I speed tested this thing, John. And I remember being impressed, but I don't seem to have the speeds in front of me. My sincere apologies. I can't believe that. Where are they? Dang it. But I did not try sitting on it, but it's a steel case. So I feel like I could sit on this thing. I certainly would not have any hesitation of just throwing it into my bag and, you know, throwing that all over the place. So, I mean, I don't think it's going to bend without a lot of work. I mean, it's not only is it a hard drive inside, but it's, you know, a steel cage around the thing. So yeah, I think you'd be all right. It's fun. You know, again, cool to see the iteration on the stuff. What am I saying here? I don't know. You got something to say, John?
I do, Dave. So, after going to CE Week, I ran into a number of vendors, and some of them wanted to send me goodies to check out. So, I'm going to tell you about some that I actually did check out, and I, you know, received an actual, you know, so this isn't just hearsay. This is actually my using them in a short period of time. So, I'm going to give you a mini review here.
Great.
So, here's one that differentiates itself from the competition here that I thought was pretty slick. So it's the Leaf LEEF iBridge mobile memory. It has two connectors on it. There is a USB connector and a Lightning connector. And it's similar to a product that I talked about in the past, the SanDisk iXpand, I believe, was the other product. And they do similar things, but I'm going to tell you what's unique about this. So one, the design of it. I think I like the design of this a little better than the competition. The competition, you have to raise up the Lightning connector. And to me, that just seemed, I mean, it works, but it concerned me at first. It's like, because you're kind of bending something, and I haven't broken it or anything. So, but this one is actually a curved design here. So I kind of like that. Now, the thing it does the same is that it will allow you, so as the name implies, it's mobile memory that lets you offset your media for your, for your iOS device.
Okay.
And then play it. And it has capacities ranging from 16 gigabytes, which the retail on that is $59.99, up to 256 gigabytes, $399.99. So it'll hold media, you know, so music, video. So that's the same as the, you know, similar products, is that it lets you bring that stuff. And of course you, you know, when you run it on iOS, you run their app and it'll prompt you for that. That actually brings me up to something interesting, Dave, that I noticed about iOS, and then I'll get back on topic here. I've noticed that iOS, as of late, will now bring up a generalized dialogue. So when I put this thing in, it'll say, iBridge app would like to talk to iBridge device. And I'm like, I don't remember being asked that before. So I think they've added, since I've last used this type of device, a layer of security to iOS. And then it's prompting you. It's basically saying, hey, do you want this software to talk to this hardware that you just stuck into me? And you can say allow or no. But back to what this product does. So the two unique things about this product, though, which I think is really neat. So it lets you shuttle files back and forth between USB and iOS devices. That's neat. And play your media. What makes this unique, Dave, is that it has what they call an iBridge camera. So you plug it in, you can take pictures, but when you're taking a picture, it doesn't put it in your camera roll. It stores it on this device, which I haven't seen anybody else figure out how to do that. So that's pretty neat. So if you're running low, so if you want to take pictures with your iOS device, but you're running low, your camera roll is almost clogged, well, this it saves it directly to this device. That's kind of neat.
Huh.
Then the other thing it does is it does a pass-through. So when you plug this in, so the other device had a battery, so it wouldn't be consuming power on it. This has a slightly different approach. So when you plug it into your iOS device, if you then plug the USB portion into a battery, it does a charging pass-through. So that's neat, too. So it passes through an external battery with a USB connection and charges your phone while you're using it. So,
pretty cool.
That's all I got to say about that. So pretty slick. So it's different from, there's two other devices I know out there that do something similar here. So, but I think they've, you know, defined their own niche here as far as the features that they offer.
Huh.
All right.
Yeah, I like it. That's pretty cool, man. Pretty cool.
Definitely for people that didn't make the right choice when they bought their iOS device and didn't get enough memory.
Right. Well, yeah, kind. I mean, yeah, yeah. It's right. Right. Very cool. Very cool. What else we got?
And then the second one, which I've been trying out, and I think this is pretty cool too, Dave. So it's called AirTame.
Okay.
And I'll tell you what it has, and then you'll kind of figure out what it does. So okay. One end of it is an HDMI connector. And the other end of it that you really can't see is Wi-Fi radios, both 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz. There's also a connector. There's also a connector for power because you do have to power it. So they give you a little power plug. But it's basically if I had to summarize what it is, if you're familiar with the Mac, it's pretty much like AirPlay, but it's not AirPlay. It's their own product.
Right.
So the nice part about it is that, so number one, so HDMI, of course, plugs into, so I plugged it into my HDTV.
Sure.
And then you have to download a piece of software. So the nice thing here, so you may ask, well, why would I get this versus AirPlay? Well, the thing is that this runs on multiple platforms.
Right.
So the software runs on Mac, on Windows, on iOS, on Android, and I think Linux as well, and even Windows Phone.
Got it.
And their market is basically, well, what if it, so I could see a number of people that would want to use this. So one, if you are in an enterprise situation and you just don't want to be fiddling with cables and you know, ripping your hair out trying to get a projector to work, I found that this is really, really cool for that. You can address it in a number of ways. So the one way is when you set it up, and the setup is really cool too. But you can set it up a number of ways. So one, you can either take this device and bond it to your Wi-Fi network, and then anybody else that is on that Wi-Fi network can then access it.
Huh, cool.
Or you can connect to it. So if you want maximum throughput, especially if you're doing, you know, HD video and stuff like that, then you may want to just connect directly to the device itself. And again, it can do either 2.4 gigahertz or 5 gigahertz. And it has a geeky aspect in that you can tweak the parameters, so you can tweak how large the cache is, the resolution. There are different modes depending on what you want to do. So if you're doing a presentation, you probably are focusing more on quality. Whereas if you're doing video, you probably want more, you know, performance and latency. And it lets you tweak those settings as well. So I thought that was pretty neat.
That's cool.
The published retail, I think, is $299. Right now, if you get it from them, I believe it's $100 off. It's $199. And then if you do a pre-order, I think they'll even give you 25% off. So,
nice. That's cool, man. Cool. I did want to, I found the press release on this Seagate drive, the Seagate Backup Plus. The 4 terabyte drive is new. It's due out, I believe, any day now. And it is $239 for the 4 terabyte capacity. So it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. And then I wanted to move. Well, I want to move into Watchland briefly here, John. And the first thing I wanted to talk about was the spec Candy Shell Fit, this was something I thought was stupid when I first saw it. And this is going to be a theme, I got a couple other things that don't have to do with the watch. But when I first saw it, it's a bumper for the watch, right? It's a hard shell, no mistaking it for a spec device, right? I mean, it has the hard shell and then the little kind of rubber face that you would expect from a spec iPhone case or anything like that. It's classic spec look. And it just snaps over your watch. You can put it on while you're wearing your watch. Obviously, it comes in both 42 and 38, and you can get it in a variety of colors. I think they have blue, black, red, and then a white in the 38, but not in the 42, it looks like. And I thought it was stupid, but I wanted to test it out. And so I snapped it on it, and it leaves space for the crown and has a button presser thing for the button, and then leaves space for the microphone and the speaker on the other side of the watch. And that was a month ago that I snapped it on and thought it was stupid. And I really haven't taken it off since, other than to show it to people and how easy it goes on and off. It's awesome. I really love this thing on the watch, and it especially with the sport watch, it really just kind of, you know, I mean, it makes it a little thicker. Yeah, but it totally protects it. And so I love it. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. It's $30. So snap it right on your Apple Watch and you're good to go. So that's one thing. And then the other day I got something from Tech Armor called Flexiglass. And again, this is for the Apple Watch, and they have a couple of things that are built for the watch, but you know, I'm a big fan of the tempered glass shields for my iPhone and my iPad. I've got them on all of them in the house. And so I popped this on the watch, and it does exactly what you'd expect it to do. $10 gets you, I believe, two of them in a package, if I'm not mistaken. But it just, you know, it's glass. It's protective glass for the watch, especially for the sport watch, right? Which is not a sapphire screen. I've had no trouble tapping on it or using it or anything. The hardest part was putting it on, because the watch face is curved. And it's the spot of the watch face that is flat is small, right? So you don't have a lot of tolerance on there to place this thing. And if you place it over the edge, well, then you've got a piece of glass over a curved edge. But I was able to pop it right back up. It came with, so I did, I'd put it on wrong, but I was able to pop it back up, and it did not ruin the glass. It came with a little piece of tape that you use to pull the dust off of the glass side. So I put it back down, and now it's been on there, and that'll probably stay on the watch for quite some time. So that's another good thing that makes it fun. Two fun things from the company that we like to call Tilt, T-Y-L-T. The first is their Duo cable. And this is, it's the Flip Duo, F-L-Y-P Duo, I believe, or the Syncable Duo cable. This is, I love Tilt's cables these days. They're these flat ribbon style cables, and they feel indestructible. I'm sure if you took scissors to them, you could break them, but they're way more beefy and like I said, indestructible than the typical cases. And the cool part about the Syncable Duo, well, there's two cool parts. One is it's got a USB connector that, if I'm not mistaken here, I might have myself confused. It's one of those reversible USB connectors, right? So you can just plug it in either way you want, which is nice. And then the other part is it's got the cable itself is a micro USB on the other end. It's regular USB and then to micro USB. But then it's got built into the cable and attached to the cable a micro USB to lightning adapter. So you can use this on any type of device you want. Great for your travel bag and $25. So that's one thing. And then the other thing from Tilt, which is not brand new, but I love so much, is their what they call their Ribbon, R-I-B-B-N. This is a car charger that has their Ribbon cable right on it. And man, it is exactly what you want. It's it because in the car is where things get, you know, banged around, or like me, I have a power adapter, the old cigarette lighter adapter style thing inside my center console, which means I always have a cable running out of my center console to plug into my phone. Well, what better cable to have than a flat, really sturdy Ribbon cable? And so this thing has now built a staple in my car. And I love it. And they've got it with, you know, micro USB or lightning, whatever you like. So that's that. And, while on the subject of the car, John, I got these things from Teezy. It's called the Equinox Charger, and T-I-Z-I is the name of it. That one is four. They call it the Teezy Equinox Turbo Mega, I think is what it's called. It's got four USB ports on this thing that it's like a little brick. You plug into your cigarette lighter outlet, and now you've got four USB ports. But it's tiny, and you can charge at full speed. It's outstanding, really, really good stuff. And we've been using that. Actually, I put that in the backseat of the car so that the kids can plug in and always have place to charge, which I really like. And it's like red and black and looks crazy, which is, you know, fun. In the category, I told you there was something else that when I got it, I thought it was stupid. And then I realized it wasn't. Blue Lounge has this Posto headphone stand, and it's just a stand. You build it, and I mean, it's assemble it. You don't have to build it. You just piece it together, and it holds your headphones on your desk. And I had this box on the floor next to my desk, and I thought, well, this is stupid. I'm never going to set it up. And for days, I was moving my full-size headphones around my desk, trying to get them out of my way. And then finally realized, hey, wait a minute, dum-dum. Why don't you try that thing? And so I did. I set this thing up, and now I have my headphones on this beautiful little stand, and they're like up and high and out of the way. So it's really not that stupid, as it turns out, John. In fact, it's pretty good, and hopefully it won't have to leave my desk. So that's what I got going on. Do you have one or two more things for us, John, before we wrap this one up?
I think I got one.
Okay.
More.
Okay.
Dave, John. Again, something that I tried, and I'm actively using it right now. So it is the Phone Suit Flex XT Pocket Charger for iPhone 6, 6 Plus, 5S, 5C, 5.
Okay.
It works in all of them. Some of the reasons I like this charger versus some of the other things I have. So Dave, I got a ton, like as probably you do, like we actually got, you know, a handout at the last show we went to. A lot of these 1200 milliamp hour, you know, portable battery packs, crap, which are okay.
Yeah.
But well, actually, you know, it's funny. The one that they gave us that we thought was, at least I was able to charge that one up again, but they gave it to us dead. It was like, yeah, thanks, guys.
Oh, the one from the one from MasterCard that they gave to us?
Yeah.
It didn't totally
I was able to get
work.
That to work.
I couldn't.
So yours was DOA.
Oh, mine was able to charge up. A hotel room, man. It's that didn't make it home. Huh. Yeah.
No, I charged mine up. So that class, you know, a lot of people make them. 1200 milliamp hours, sure. You need a lightning cable. They're all right.
Yeah.
I got like three of them. But you know, you got to bring your cable and all that, and they charge with micro USB. This device is, I like this device for the following reasons. So number one, this is a 26 milliamp hour battery, which at least for someone like me that has an iPhone 5, that's more than a full charge. The reason I kind of don't like the 1200 milliamp hour things is that's not a full charge. And I like a full charge. So that's one thing. So one is that it's 2600.
Okay.
Number two, it has a lightning connector on it, so you don't have to have a cable.
Nice.
But here's the thing that they did that really made me happy. And I actually was disappointed because I actually did order. There was a special deal online. Somebody had a battery pack that you could get for free and you would just have to pay like $5 shipping.
Sure.
And I ordered it and got it online. I think it was X Power or something like that. And I get it in the mail and I'm like, oh, this looks great. You know, it's cool. It's got suction cups. You put it on and I try to plug it into my phone. And guess what? It doesn't plug in because the connector's too stubby. It's too short. Doesn't anybody think about this? To me, if I'm going to design a charging product for an iOS device, at least make sure that it works if someone buys the Apple case. And this one works famously with the Apple case. And then I'm able to plug it in with the Apple leather case and it works.
Nice.
Not a lot of people think about that. These guys thought about that. So that's the second thing that's nice about this. So one is the capacity. Two is that it actually plugs in to a phone with a case on it. Though I'm sure there are limits. And then the third thing is that it does a pass-through. So if you plug the micro USB, and they give you a micro USB to USB cable, if you plug that into a source, it will then charge both the battery and be charging your phone simultaneously. So that's kind of neat, too. Nice construction, portable. It even comes with a little cap and stuff. So right now, I'd say that's my favorite portable charging solution.
And I'm sorry, I didn't have a link for this ahead of time. What's the name of it?
Oh yeah. The link, I put it in our thing. So it's I'll put it in our room.
What's the name of it though? Just the answer. I want is the name.
The Phone Suit Flex Pocket Charger, I think is the,
okay.
That's what they call it. And the retail, if you buy it from their site, is $69.95, though okay. I looked online and like many things here, the suggested retail price is exactly that. You can probably get it for less.
Sure. Sure. That's awesome, man. Very, very awesome. 2,600 milliamps. I like that. That's good. Yeah. Sweet. All right, folks. Well, that time has come. As with all good things, cool stuff found must end. Or at least be put on hiatus. You know, for a little while. If you have cool stuff found, send it in to us at feedback@macgeekgab.com.
Feedback@macgeekgab.com is where you should send it.
That's feedback@macgeekgab.com, unless you are a premium supporter. And then you get to email us at premium@macgeekgab.com. If you want to learn more about premium, please do visit us at macgeekgab.com and you'll see all the details there. Premium's your way. It was chosen by you. All of you who wanted to support us directly, that's MacGeekGab Premium. And we do have a couple of givebacks. Premium address is, of course, one of them. Any of you, though, can call 206-666-GEEK, which, John, is
4-3-3-5.
4-3-3-5 sounds right to me. If you want to write to us and tell us how much you love the show or how much you don't love the show, we would actually love for this week to put an effort on iTunes comments. We'd love to see you send in iTunes comments. These reviews there really help us, you know, get attention in iTunes, which brings in more listeners, which is good for you because not only more content, but, you know, obviously it's good to have the listener base growing. And that's one way to make it happen. So please, please, if you haven't done an iTunes comment for us, go ahead and do one. We'd really appreciate it. Just go into iTunes and we can't reply to those. Of course, well, we sometimes reply on the air. We'll read the new ones. We'll read either all of the new ones or our favorite new ones over the next week. So you got to send them in and then we'll read them on the show. How's that sound? Good? Good. Cashfly. We'd love to thank the folks at Cashfly, CACHEFLY.com. They provide all the bandwidth. And a big shout out to Michael Johnston. You got to check out his iOS show podcast. He does a great job with that there. And of course, GetAppler.com. Any comments, John, before we send this one on its way?
I guess my only comment is, if you're listening to this, thank you for your support.
Yeah, it's well said, my friend. In addition to thanking all of you, our listeners, I want to thank, as we mentioned during the show, TunnelBear at tunnelbear.com/MGG for a free 500 megs a month VPN. That's fantastic. I want to thank the folks at Casper, CASPER.com/MGG. Coupon code MGG gets you $50 off right there. And that's fantastic, too. You know, I'm thinking, though, as I'm going through this, and I'm going to look here, John, because I felt like Tunnel Bear had a coupon code. No, we didn't. We didn't have a coupon code. No, it's just the tunnelbear.com/MGG. That's what I thought. Okay. It's been a crazy show trying to get all the timestamps and everything. So I started to question my notes here. Of course, I want to thank the folks. All the folks. But specifically, I want to thank the folks at Gazelle. You can buy stuff from them. You can sell your stuff to them, as we mentioned during the show. Also in the podcast marketplace this month is iMazing at iMazing.com. The successor to Discade. Great utility. You got to check it out from DigiDNA. It's, of course, Smile at SmileSoftware.com/geek. And run all that text expanded 5 this week, this month. Squarespace at Squarespace.com/MGG. Coupon code MGG gets you 10%. Barebones Software at Barebones.com. Otherworld Computing at MaxSales.com. And of course, Lynda at LYNDA.com/MGG for 10 free days of their training videos. John, any lasting advice to share with everyone here?
I don't know, Dave. I guess all I can say, now that we're at the end, is that if you've gotten this far, then just make sure you don't get caught.
Made up.